one of the best things about tonight's kickoff event is there will be a game against the Phillies to see as well, and that's something that, you know, we think is important to, you know, basically look at trafficking and slavery not as some kind of exotic thing that happens in other countries, but something that we have to deal with here in America. So the D.C. Human Trafficking Task Force is the official community partner with the Nationals for the game, and the team is putting some weight behind the notion of raising awareness and trying to get people to come together on this pressing issue.
And when you raise awareness, do you distribute some little flyer, or do you hope to have a campaign going on television, or how do you make people aware that someone can be trafficked and maybe arrested for prostitution or something else and yet could be a victim of trafficking?
I think that one of the things that that we're hoping to do, you know, coming out of the energy that we get tonight with the game, and a lot of the folks from the task force are going to be coming together at the stadium. Hopefully they'll be having T-shirts which will allow people to, you know, stop and ask them for information, and they'll be armed with the ability to tell people about the problem. But then I think the notion of follow-up for the task force, there's a couple of things going on, including the notion that the Ricky Martin Foundation is probably going to start doing some work here in Washington through a project called Call and Live that Ricky is going to be doing in the D.C. Latino community. And as well, the folks over at HHS, which I know you might have even worked on this, Jane, have a very good program, the Rescue and Restore Coalition. And we're going to try to drive some of those materials that HHS has, which basically tell people to look between, you know, look below the surface. Don't just see that person as an illegal alien. Don't just see that person as a prostitute, but actually look to see what kind of victimization they might have suffered.
Yeah, actually, both at HHS, at the Administration for Children and Families, and even at the Labor Department, they were more child trafficking and labor-related offenses. But, you know, a lot of agencies do have this focus on trafficking, and yet I just don't think that it has reached the point where the public is aware that this is happening in the great numbers that it can be happening in.
You know, I think that part of it is that people know that it's there, but they don't really have a name for it. You know, when we talk to people about, say, for instance, the type of abuse that servants might face, you know, when they're in that home, they don't get a day off, they don't get to go outside, and then there's abuse that follows in its wake. I think, you know, many people, especially here in the D.C. area, they recognize that that happens, but they don't necessarily think of it when they think of modern slavery or human trafficking. And then, of course, every once in a while, a case comes and goes. The U.S. Attorney's Office here and in Greenbelt and in Alexandria, you know, have all done cases. And, you know, I think that we're seeing, under the leadership of Roy Austin, who's the new head of the Human Trafficking Task Force over at the U.S. Attorney's Office, I think we're going to see a lot more prosecutions. And maybe what that does then is it starts making people here in the D.C. area recognize that it is all around us, unfortunately.
We're talking with Ambassador Luis C. de Baca. He's director of the Office to Monitor and Combat Trafficking in Persons at the State Department. And are similar programs being sponsored by the State Department in other cities and also involving local celebrities there, too?
Well, I certainly don't want to take credit for everything we're facilitating. The State Department actually has the lead on the interagency process, so we play a coordinating function. But, you know, like here in D.C., where you've got the U.S. Attorney's Office, you've got folks from the non-governmental organizations, such as the Polaris Project here in town. You know, we've got a lot of, I think, good local grassroots organizations around the country that are coming together on this. And I know that, for instance, the task force out in Orange County has done a 10K run. I think that the folks in Houston have had concerts. I think we're going to see more and more of these types of events. And in fact, one of the things that we're going to be seeing in New York in about another 2 or 3 weeks is a whole series of events over the course of a week that the students at Columbia and NYU are putting together. There's a very good movie called Call and Response that is going to be aired at that event, and I think that that's available for use out in the college campuses and anyone around the country that would like to look at it. What it does, actually, is it makes the linkage between modern slavery, what we're dealing with right now, and antebellum slavery, which is the protections against slavery that came out of the Civil War are the same protections that we use, you know, now in 2009 when we're trying to protect the rights of people who are still being exploited.
You know, Ambassador, I wonder if the new regulations, the Western Hemisphere Initiative that require documentation as you come across the border, might cut down on the number of people that can come in from, you know, especially the southern borders into the United States. Do you think it'll have an impact, or are you seeing anything?
You know, what's interesting with WITI is that on the one hand, it, I think, will should have an impact as far as fraudulent documents are concerned. The concern that we always have, and this is something that I raise when I'm overseas, it's something that I talk a lot with among the governmental organizations here, whether it's ICE or Citizenship and Immigration Services, is that whenever we do something to tighten up, we have to also look to see whether the coyotes are actually taking advantage of that. So sometimes what happens is, you know, if we make things a little bit tougher at the border, then the folks who are coming here willingly as migrants are more willing to put themselves into harm's risk. And that's when you start seeing the kidnappings. That's when you start seeing the debt bondage, you know, the trafficking and slavery in order to pay back the smuggling fee. So it's all interrelated. And unfortunately, it's one of those things where when we do one thing, we have to then look at the two or three other ramifications that might flow from it.
But it sounds like the kind of problem where people, just average citizens, can be on the lookout for signs of this kind of thing, and then they have an avenue to do something about it.
You know, it's interesting because the what we've seen in the United States is we've seen folks who have seen the note tossed over the fence and have taken that note and gone to the police. We've seen people who have noticed something that they just knew was wrong. We've even seen men who were out in, you know, bars and other establishments who have, you know, seen women who they thought were not, you know, something wasn't right, and have been good Samaritans who've helped women get out of that situation. So, you know, I think that that notion of vigilance, that notion of knowing that, you know, pick up the phone, obviously pick up the phone and call 911 if you think that there's a trafficking situation that you're seeing in front of you.